time?
I believe it is culture time.
It's outstanding.
It's a shame one of us doesn't have a British accent. Hey, everyone. Welcome to Culture Time. I'm Hemel Javeri with co-host
Brian Minter. It's me, everybody's favorite co-host.
How are you?
I'm excellent. How are you?
I'm good. You sound very excited.
Well, I'm excited to be here podcasting with my old pal Hemel.
It's episode 9 of season 2 of our Keanu Reeves season, and today we're going to be talking about John Wick.
The critically acclaimed and commercially successful gung-fu action movie, John Wick.
Ah, someone's been doing their Googling. That's how come you know it's gung-fu.
I did learn that on the internet.
For those of you who have not seen John Wick, which I feel like should be a very small percentage considering that John Wick basically reruns on any like cable TV channel at almost any time.
Well, I had never seen it prior to viewing it for this podcast.
Okay, let's get into the plot very quickly of John Wick, which is an assassin who is motivated by a loss. And he goes basically on a killing spree.
Although I think critically he is an ex-assassin. He is a retired
assassin.
He is
a retired assassin who goes on a killing spree. Mm-hmm. There's not really much of a plot. It really is the ex-assassin, John Wick, going after the guy that killed his dog. I want to know what your initial reaction is.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was a well-made, kinetically thrilling action film. I thought Keanu was great in it, mm-hmm. for many of the reasons we discussed on last week's episode, the Matrix podcast, which we can return to. I enjoyed it. I'll probably watch the second one at some point. I don't know that it left a lasting impression on me. It was violent as all get out.
I feel like that about the Matrix.
Huh. So you said I wasn't going to like John Wick.
I assumed that you would not like John Wick.
Why did you think I wasn't going to like it?
Because I thought that the violence would be too much for you, and because you generally, don't take this the wrong way.
All right, lay it on me.
But you have a hard time embracing the film within the structure of the film. And I was like, okay, if Brian doesn't buy into this premise of this dude being motivated by
the loss of his dog.
Then he's going to be like, but it's just a dog. He can get a new one.
Did you think the film itself, like, it was just a dog? Like, why would he? I mean, I think the film is trying to say that he's actually motivated by, he's acting out of grief, the loss of his wife. And the dog is clearly a symbol for that, right? Is that not it?
That is it, and that isn't it.
Explain to me the thing about the dog. The filmmakers were pulling our leg a little bit with the dog thing, right?
No! What I'm hearing here is that Brian's actually heartless.
No. He didn't go and kill all those people solely because they killed his dog.
So,
he did it because his wife died and she left him the dog so he wouldn't have to grieve alone. And he was mourning not just the loss of his wife, but the loss of this entirely other life he had created and dreamed for himself. That was all taken away. And then the cherry on top of the grief sundae were these asshole Russian gangsters killing his dog.
Them killing the dog is what takes the life away. It has nothing to do really with his wife dying. That he's mourning the death of the life that he could have had, right?
I thought maybe it's just about the dog.
I don't know. The thing is that he is, but he's mourning the death of the life that he could have had because they killed his dog. Had that dog still been alive, he doesn't do this. He lives.
No.
Yes. If the dog does not die, he does not go on a random killing spree. He doesn't.
Because the dog was the triggering incident.
Yes.
But the thing that it triggered was clearly far deeper than affection for a dog he'd only known for, 24 hours?
Right. But what I'm trying to say is that if the dog is still alive, he doesn't do this. That's why the dog is so important.
Okay. But the thing that the dog's death triggers is clearly more, and I don't know if the movie ever makes this explicit, but clearly it's triggering all these other things for him. He's got emotional PTSD.
So one of the reasons that I like the film is that they cleverly avoid a lot of tropes for these, like, revenge fantasies, which is that the man is motivated by the death of his wife. Right?
Not, well, that seems like the obvious choice. That, right. Like, they killed his wife, so now he's going to get him.
And it's called fridging, right? In, I guess, sci-fi, which is that it's the motivation for the hero to go on his epic quest or whatever. And that's a little bit of the case here. He obviously is super in love with her. He's grieving, but they make it very clear in the beginning that she had a terminal illness. They both knew that she was going to die.
Right.
And he had resigned himself to the fact that he was going to lose her. So he's not motivated. Like, it's revenge is not a motivation for him. Revenge for her death. He may be acting out of grief.
And I think so. I think you're right that what the filmmakers did was like, oh, they needed a reason for this guy to go kill everybody he saw.
Right.
And they're like, oh, you know what? It's cheesy to make it his dead wife. Let's do a kind of tongue-in-cheek twist and make it the dog his wife gave him. But it's still revenge. He's still out to get the people who wronged him.
Yeah, one of the reasons that I also really love this movie is that there's very strict rules and a lot of really strict codes about the film.
So for those of you who have not seen John Wick,
I think in the
universe of the film, he goes to this hotel and he gives
the Continental.
The Continental, and he gives
a gold coin.
Daniels from The Wire, he gives him a gold coin, and there's like a doctor on staff, and there's a bar underground where no one's allowed to kill each other, and there's all these very elaborate rules and protocols.
Yeah, that's called world building.
Yes, but it's like, it's tongue in cheek.
No, it's not tongue in cheek, though.
It's not tongue in cheek?
No, it's not tongue in cheek. I think that you're being very dismissive of the film
by saying
that.
People who made the movie, please follow up with us on Twitter and tell us if you were having a bit of a go or you believe all this shit.
No, no one's having a go. This is
I think they're having a bit of a go.
No, I think that they've really tried hard to create little levels of humanity within this cold, unfeeling world of assassins, right? The relationship between Willem Dafoe and Keanu Reeves
is great. And I'm not knocking this. I enjoyed the world building. I just don't think the film intended for us to take it seriously.
I think the film absolutely intended for us to take it seriously. They've did such a good job with all of these little details that humanize this world of inhumane killers.
But we're not really supposed to like John Wick. We're
supposed
to root for him.
Are you kidding me? We're supposed to like John Wick.
No, he's a murderous sociopath.
We're supposed to like John Wick.
I don't. Why do you like John Wick?
They establish his humanity very early on, right? He loves his wife. They have a nice house in the suburbs. He's got a car that he loves. And they show him very much living a normal life, right?
Yes.
He gets up, he gets his coffee. For some godforsaken reason, he's still waking up at 6 a.m. even though he has nowhere to be. But he also follows a very strict code. He's not just a crazy sociopath that's out to kill people.
But isn't a professional assassin, by definition, a murderous sociopath? Like, it's not a normal career path.
This is why I asked you if you could buy into the premise of the film. And if you can't get over that, then
you don't buy into the premise of the film. I suspend my disbelief. I enter the world of the film and say, yes, I understand how it works. Let's see some killing and jumping.
But you don't connect to the character at all because you can't get over the murdering part.
I don't take any of it seriously. It didn't seem to me like something that was meant to be taken seriously. It almost felt like, you know, oh, you know what? It's really fun to have a crazy shoot 'em up movie. Let's put enough plot onto it so that we can do that enjoyably and efficiently.
I don't agree with that take at all. I think that
I'm surprised.
The reason John Wick is such a huge success and the reason there's a John Wick 2 and a John Wick 3 is because you have to connect to John Wick. You have to like John Wick.
Yeah,
and people love
Liam Neeson series. There's like 10 of those.
Yeah, and people love him. That's why there's so many takens.
To switch gears here.
Okay.
This movie is chock-a-block full of fantastic actors in little-ass roles, which was awesome.
Yeah.
It was Willem Dafoe and Ian McShane.
Yeah.
And not just Lance Reddick from The Wire, but also Clark Peters, who played Lester Freeman on The Wire. Two Wire actors, both great. And who else is in this? There's all kinds of people.
So Ian McShane is in it. He plays Winston, the guy who runs the Continental.
Little tiny role, but he's great in it.
He's great in it. Adrienne Pilecki, who is Tyra in Friday Night Lights. She's the female assassin.
Right.
She's great in it. Let me ask you a question.
Ask me the question.
Who was your favorite?
I enjoyed all of them. I would say Willem Dafoe. Like the character is kind of likable and it was done in such a way that you don't actually know if he's on Keanu's side or not, or John Wick's side, until a little further along. And like Willem Dafoe in a little role like that, it was a little bit of a treat to watch. Who was yours?
It's a very good question. I will have to go with the concierge, the guy at the Continental. I think he was my favorite.
Doing a weird like African accent somehow, which I don't understand.
It just makes it otherworldly.
Like, yes, otherworldly. I agree. Deliberately otherworldly.
Okay. Okay. Can we agree on that terminology?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Okay.
I will say I was disappointed in one member of the supporting cast. I was very disappointed in. And I don't know the actor's name, but he's the central villain, the Russian mobster, the father of the kid who sets the whole thing off.
Yeah.
I just thought he was okay.
Viggo?
Yes, Viggo.
Yeah.
Like, there's a couple, like, there's one really great moment near the end when they're in the car trying to escape, and he's got Liz Lemon's boyfriend with him, who's the guy from the insurance commercials.
Yeah.
Another actor in a small role that we all recognize. And he's just kind of laughing. Like, John Wick is coming to kill him. Everybody knows it, and they're all losing their shit. And he's just like, oh, well, this is it. This is the end for us. But for the most part, I did, like, he was too, he didn't quite make sense to me, and he was a little too, I don't know, schlocky or something. I felt like the movie deserved a better villain.
Oh, I really liked him. I thought he was very good. You're going to feel bad about this, because that guy died.
Oh, no, dude, I take it all back. That guy was terrific. It was a tour de force.
I think that this, I feel bad about this, but it was one of his last roles.
I mean, he wasn't terrible, but this movie just cried out for a terrific villain.
Oh, I really liked him. I thought he was really good. I thought he had very, like, he had such a decent amount of respect for John Wick, and then almost grudgingly had to save his son, not out of any real affection for his son, but because it was the thing to do.
And
I think that all came across.
He wasn't bad in the role. I just, you know, he was a little more grounded of a villain than a borderline farcical movie like this, as we both agreed, than calls for. The son was good. He was such a, you wanted John Wick to shoot him in the head.
So I only watched a little bit of Game of Thrones, and I know that he's Theon Greyjoy,
yes,
and he's
plays
horrible.
Equally horrible person.
Yeah,
in Game
and
of Thrones.
That is very good, like, context that you're bringing into the role.
It might be hard for him to play a likable character at this point.
I think so. I think he's a guy that killed John Wick's dog. So,
how did you feel about the violence in the movie?
I thought that the violence in the movie was fine.
There was a lot of it.
There's a lot of it. I'm not very much into... That's one of the reasons I avoided watching the film for so long, is because I'm just not into the long set pieces.
Yes.
They're not as exciting for me as I think they are for other people.
I could see how well done they were, though, right?
Right.
Again, this goes back to Keanu's, like, love of fight choreography and sort of real-world violence in movies. That he like, you see human beings doing all this stuff.
Right, and that's one of the reasons that I think John Wick is actually really good, is that it's not CGI, it's not a lot of bunch of really quick cuts, it's very much choreographed, realistic violence.
Yes. You had to find people who are physically capable of doing all these crazy things,
right,
and then have this wide shot of them all doing it.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess it has been described as a dance, right? It very much is people having to move in choreographed ways to get everything across.
And you know, I read, and again, it's one of the things we enjoy about Mr. Reeves off camera, the two directors of the film were, I think, fight choreographers or second unit directors from The Matrix.
Yeah.
So again, like, the learning to fight on The Matrix and seeing people choreograph fighting on The Matrix had this enormous effect on his career. Like, he has this enthusiasm for it. And I love that he keeps, like, with Man of Tai Chi, where he basically built a whole movie around one of, like, the fight guys from The Matrix.
Yeah.
Again, here, he's like, oh, these guys, this stuff is so great. Let's have this big movie all about it.
He definitely bets on talent, though, right? Chad
Stahelski
is the guy who directed John Wick. And he was Keanu's stunt double on The Matrix.
He wants to work with these people again. He loves what they do, and I think that's very refreshing. That's great about him.
And it's definitely not, I'm going to throw this guy a bone and create a B movie.
Oh yeah, for sure.
They've created
Man of Tai Chi was that, but with a lot of integrity.
But with a lot of integrity, yeah. And this definitely is. I don't think anybody expected it to be as successful as it is, but it's very much a well-thought-out film. I thought the cinematography in this movie was actually really good. It's
stylistic. But again, it sort of reminded me of The Matrix, right? There's all these, like, neo-noir shots of the rain falling and, you know, the flashes of light and this mysterious cityscapes and all that sort of thing.
So before we move on to the Keanu aspect of this, which we've only hit on a little bit.
Yes.
I don't want to get caught in the infinite loop again. When I watch this movie, to me, it's definitely a movie about grief. Is that the point that you were trying to get into?
No, not remotely.
Okay.
I don't see how you could possibly think this is a movie about grief.
Oh, see, I thought that, I was like,
this
okay.
This is a movie about shooting guns.
It is, but you were talking about subtext and maybe him not being motivated exactly by the death of the dog. And I was like, oh, well, this is, to me, might be a movie about somebody trying to process their grief.
That, to me, that seemed like the obvious subtext of the character. He's doing all this. He's on this violent revenge spree, not solely because they killed a dog he barely knew, but because he's angry and grieving over the loss of his wife, and that was the instigating event.
That's what makes John Wick so compelling.
I agree with you, and that's what, maybe I wasn't articulating this earlier, that is what I think, too. I think that is what is motivating the character's killing of all these people. Like, every time he shoots someone, he's not like, ah, my dog! He's processing his anger and his feelings about the death of his wife and the loss of this whole different life he had created with her.
Yes.
What was, for you, the most Keanu moment of the film?
Oh, this is very easy. It's when he's captured and he's sitting in the chair and Viggo is talking to him and saying, it's just a fucking dog. And Keanu finally is like, you took everything I had away from me. It was my moment to grieve. And then he pauses and then he goes, everybody's been asking me if I'm back. And then he gets really angry and he goes, yeah, I'm thinking I'm back.
That was a very Keanu moment.
And that is the absolute Keanu moment of it.
So I had a different one in mind.
Oh,
same
did
two
you?
Actors. Yeah, I might change it to yours because yours is very Keanu. There was a moment, and it's a very badass moment. And yours is a little more like ham-handed, which is what a typical Keanu moment is. It's where Viggo finally gives up the location of his son. And he says, and so Keanu's going to go and, you know, kill them all. And he says, they know you're coming. And Keanu says, of course, but it won't matter. Which is much more badass than your line. So I think yours is actually better.
It's very, very badass. I like that a lot.
Again, we see, as we've seen in other Keanu movies, when he does not have a lot of dialogue, when he does not have to do like a lot of conveying of emotion or inner turmoil, he's in his element. When he is just driving the plot forward with action. And again, this is not to say like he's only good when he's punching or kicking, but when he is moving the plot forward with like doing physical things, he is at the pinnacle of his strengths.
Yeah, as with the movies that we have really enjoyed, The Matrix, Point Break, this hits all of Keanu's strength points.
And unlike Point Break, and even sometimes The Matrix, it does not occasionally drag it down by giving him a bunch of like heavy lifting to do. It's just purely on to the next thing.
Right, and there's not a lot of exposition. That's what this movie is actually really good at, is very little exposition about how the world works. It's very much shown through action, bits of like stage business.
That's how the world building always. It's not like, this is what's happening in this place. 100 years ago, da 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 da.
And that plays to his strength, that he's not great with a lot of dialogue. And there's none of that here. But again, it leans into the fact that Keanu invites empathy anyway, like as an actor.
He does, yes.
And
you root for him.
You have to
even
root for him.
Even when he's a murderous sociopath.
Yeah. Could you imagine anybody else playing John Wick?
So we talked about with The Matrix that we couldn't fathom another actor playing that role. It was so perfectly suited for him. I think John Wick is very similar to that. Like, again, I'm sure I could, I don't know, like, imagine Edward Norton in this role. Yeah, it just wouldn't work. Imagine, Matthew Broderick.
Well, you're picking terrible actors.
Well, Edward Norton's a terrific actor, but I can't imagine him in this role.
Well, you need somebody
Ving Rhames, maybe? Hard to picture Ving Rhames in this role.
Ving Rhames maybe could do it. Like Tom Cruise, right? Could you picture Tom Cruise in this role?
I could picture Tom Cruise in this role.
I feel like...
I'm glad Keanu did instead of Tom Cruise.
90% of Tom Cruise roles are him running around being a bad guy.
Yeah, like
anyway.
The Mission Impossible movies, which I feel like are enjoyable in the exact same way. They're just very well crafted, and they're set piece to set piece to set piece. It doesn't really matter what the protagonist is feeling inside.
Right.
Same kind of thing.
This leans into the other thing about Keanu that we love, which is his unflappability. John Wick, for the most part, is
this
very...
This may be his most unflappable character
He's
of all.
Very unflappable.
He's getting shot and kicked in the face, and his life's being destroyed. He's just like, and he just goes on to do the next thing.
Because nothing can really touch him. His wife is dead.
He's dead inside.
He is dead inside.
His physical death is just an aftershock.
Exactly. He's very, very unflappable.
But we are given to understand, one thing I do like about the movie is the almost, like, it's the, sort of the deliberately ham-handed way in which we are made to understand. Like, we don't get any backstory for John Wick.
Mm-mm.
But once John Wick has been loosed upon these gangsters, everyone around them is like, oh, shit, you pissed off John Wick, and they run away.
Yeah.
And it's, and you're like, oh, so the movie's telling us, like, he is this legendary murderous badass.
Yeah.
And I think that it does that really well.
Yeah. I mean,
oh, another John Leguizamo. Right?
Yeah. And that's the first time you get an inkling that John Wick is a badass.
Yeah,
because John Leguizamo is like, you dumb motherfucker, you stole John Wick's car.
Right.
And everybody knows that's John Wick's car.
Yeah. So I think the movie is trying to, like, his unflappability probably is not solely a product of his grief at his wife's death. Like,
mm-hmm.
he was really good at the job of murdering dozens of people before, somehow.
Yes.
I did read something interesting, which is the original premise for the movie called for a much older actor to play this role. In fact, the screenwriters had Paul Newman kind of in mind. As Hemel just made a face.
I mean, Paul Newman's been dead for a while.
Well, really? How long has he been dead? Maybe like, just in there.
A while.
Yeah, maybe that was just a placeholder. Yeah. But the idea, which would have made actually maybe more sense, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
this character has this storied past. Keanu's not a young man, but he obviously had to do a lot at some point in his life before we got to the point where we know him.
Yeah, he's. I mean, it's funny to think of movie like this starring a middle-aged assassin, but that's what Keanu is, right?
A middle-aged assassin.
He looks
good for his age, though.
He looks very good for his age. In his younger days, he killed a whole bunch of people, probably didn't think a lot about it, then decided to settle down and get married, and then got dragged back into the life.
Does every kind of older thriller action Hollywood star have to do these kind of aging hitman movies? Because Liam Neeson did it, Denzel Washington did it, Michael freaking Caine did it, Keanu did it, they all do it.
I think that that's actually a result of Taken. I think that it's because of the success of Taken.
They're like, oh shit, do that again with somebody new.
Yeah, the old man action movie,
old
I think,
action movie, yeah.
is all about Taken.
It's
I think Kevin Costner did it, and they were like, if Liam Neeson can do it, we can make it work.
Did Kevin Costner do it? Did he do it too? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He was a bad guy in a movie. I didn't see that.
So
this was definitely better than Taken.
Oh, this is way better than Taken.
Because it took itself less seriously.
Because it took itself more seriously.
That's really unfathomable
to me. There's so much thought and care poured into this film, and it's so surprisingly human. I think that there's a lot of, like, depth and dimension into John Wick, which is why I like it so much.
I don't think that.
Oh my god.
So let's, before we talk about the where this movie ranks in the Keanu scale, we should talk about the hair.
Yes, let's talk about the hair.
How did you feel about Keanu's hair in the film?
I think that, as with every good Keanu role, his hair does a lot of work. It's very appropriate for this film.
Yes, it tells you what this guy's all about. The slicked back hair and the beard.
Yes, and the beard.
Which is kind of a weird beard.
It
sort of goes up the sides of his face in a strange way. Like,
yeah.
Most people shave that part.
Well, it is a little bit of the stylistic, like, affectedness of the film.
Yeah,
it has
little,
to do with
a little devilish.
Oh, what do we talk about this? In The Matrix, we talked about levels of hair and how his hair transitions as well.
Yeah, his
in the
hair's
beginning,
doing a lot of character building work in The Matrix.
Yeah, in the beginning of the film, he just has, like, boyfriend hair. And then he slicks it back and it becomes assassin hair.
Yes, you're right. It's sort of floppy.
Yeah.
And you don't realize it's going to be assassin hair.
It's going to be assassin hair.
And then it is
when
he goes assassining.
And then it is assassin hair. So
at one point, this is very minor, but they kill his dog. And he's like, oh shit, now I got to kill every motherfucker in the city. He goes down to the basement where, and you know, oh, he's going to get all his guns and knives. For some reason, they're under a slab of concrete he has to break up with a hammer.
Yeah, because he was hiding it from his wife.
Under concrete? Could
yeah.
Could he put it in the garage or
have
something?
Have you seen how nice that house is?
It's a nice house, yeah.
That house was obviously custom built with assassin money, and he had buried the evidence of his old life to literally build a foundation for his new life.
Ooh, that's good. So his wife didn't know he was a former assassin.
I choose to believe that because I feel like that scene is telling us that his wife didn't know
he was an assassin. I'll buy that. And another thing I like about the film in that regard is that, like, as you say, it's not constantly explaining things to us. Like, the Willem Dafoe character comes to his wife's funeral and they shake hands and you realize, okay, these guys have a past. We don't know that they're friends or they have an affinity for one another.
Right.
And then Willem Dafoe's hired to kill him. And there's at least one scene where you're like, did he just try to kill him or did he try to warn him?
Yeah.
And then you realize later, like, oh, he's actually on Keanu's side. But the movie doesn't explain why they're friends or how they're friends. There's not a flashback to Vietnam or something.
Exactly.
And I like that about it.
And then in retrospect, you realize, oh, he must be a really good friend because he has kept tabs on him and realizes what's happened and cares about him enough to go to his wife's funeral because he thinks that he would need a friend.
Yes.
The other thing that the movie does that I really liked, which you don't because you did not agree with this, is that it makes the assassin, Keanu, he's hurt a lot in the film.
Like
he's,
injured, you mean? Like
yeah,
physically hurt?
He's like physically gets constantly broken down again and again and again. This
but
is
again,
not
a... in a more realistic film, that would substantially impede his abilities, which in this film, it does not at all.
But it does way... Okay, think about this in terms of a Tom Cruise Mission Impossible film. You know, Tom Cruise barely gets hurt in those films. He goes
yeah,
through
off of cars,
right?
He
like jumps off of airplanes mm-hmm. and he jumps out of helicopters and he like tumbles down mountains and then he just gets back up and keeps going without barely a bruise. And in this one, he gets captured. He has to get shot, and there's a doctor that actually has to come and attend to him. So that is what made this way more realistic.
Yeah, but it doesn't do like he's
oh
he gets
God.
Shot and he gets beat up. Any what actually happened to him would put a human being in the hospital.
Okay, that's
for a
every
month.
Action movie though.
Well, so there's let's say that if you put action movies on a continuum of realism to ridiculousness, I would put this one. Oh, let's say Bourne Identity movies here.
Okay.
Move up the scale to Mission Impossible.
Okay.
Up a little bit more to John Wick, and then Fast and the Furious on the other side in terms of ridiculousness or implausibility.
I don't agree with that. I would say Bourne Identity films, John Wick, and then Mission Impossible.
But they're pretty close.
And Fast and Furious. I don't think we're going to find common ground on this.
We're
so,
clearly not.
Let's move on to... Where does this rank in the Keanu canon?
That's a good question. Where do you feel this ranks in the Keanu canon?
I think that it's very high in the Keanu canon mm-hmm. because it represents resurgence for
See,
Keanu.
I don't know that Keanu can have a resurgence anymore. Like, I feel like he's already had some resurgences. But I do I think we're on the same lines here. I think that this represents a pinnacle in a sense because the people who set out to make this movie said... Who could play this role? And I have to believe that everyone in the room went, Keanu Reeves! Like, it's such a, it seems like it's tailor-made for him.
Okay. Well, I would say that this is the second coming of his career. We talked about, in terms of his career arc, he has Point Break. He has his early 90s, early 2000s action film phase where he's very, very popular. And then he has a string of not great movies, but then he comes out with The Matrix.
Right.
And that is the comeback.
Yes.
Yes.
That's the Keanu-sance.
That's the Keanu-sance. And again, it doesn't actually last very long because he then again makes a whole bunch of films that aren't really good. And
so
he's
fallen
off.
So this is the second coming of Keanu Reeves.
And this
you.
Is the second coming of Keanu Reeves because he's like John Travolta comes back with Pulp Fiction.
Yes.
His career has basically been dead after The Matrix. And then
has
he
it
comes
been?
Yeah, and then he comes back with John Wick. I looked through his IMDb list.
Nothing solid there, huh?
He has like Constantine and stuff like that. And
Constantine is an underrated movie.
Okay.
Have you seen it?
I've not seen it.
Okay, it's good.
But it was also in like 2009, right? It's been a very long time since he's actually had like a substantial showing.
We should watch Constantine. It's a departure from some of his other roles.
Maybe. Well, let me ask you this. Do you think this is a departure for Keanu?
No, I think this was very in line with this is a right down the middle for Keanu movie. This is pitching right one and right over the plate for him.
It's a home run.
It's a home run. Yeah, someone said we need to pitch a movie that Keanu Reeves can knock out of the park, and it was this one.
I think that this movie didn't require a lot of extra work for him.
Yes, this movie was very in his wheelhouse.
I think it's very much in his wheelhouse.
But as we've discussed, Keanu is not, as much as we like him, He's not an actor who is necessarily going to rise to new interpretive challenges. I feel like if you're going to have a Keanu Reeves movie, as you've said many times, and I think it's true, Keanu will not fit your movie. Your movie must fit Keanu.
Right.
So I think that's the direction that smart filmmakers and maybe he himself are doing at this point in his career.
And it's probably because he's so underrated as an action star. And that's, like, we think of Tom Cruise, we think of, like, now Matt Damon, apparently, for the Bourne Identity films.
Right. But doesn't the John Wick movies, like, cement him as an action star?
Yeah, but that's very recent.
Like, yes, for sure.
And I think that he's kind of been building up to being an action star.
He's a better action movie guy than probably all those dudes.
Yeah, I don't know. I have a soft spot for the Bourne Identity films, so maybe he's like in a tie with Matt Damon.
I like the Bourne Identity movies and the Mission Impossible movies all kind of for the same reason. But I feel like if you, like, Keanu Reeves is better at fighting on screen than those other guys.
He puts in a lot of work.
He wants to sell those fight scenes.
I listened to a podcast with the guy from The Nerdist, who has since been disgraced.
Oh, right, yeah, he got canceled, I remember.
But Keanu Reeves said that one of the main reasons he wanted to do John Wick was because he was super into learning all the fight sequences and stuff. Like, that was his favorite part.
So one thing I think that is interesting, like, we have all this respect for actors who throw them, like, method acting and Leonardo DiCaprio ate a real bear or whatever. Like, anytime you find someone, like, really immersing themselves in their job as an actor, in the kind of emotional work of acting, we love it, and they get awards, and we all clap all the time. And Keanu doesn't really do that, but he immerses himself in the physical side. Like, what do I have to do with my body to become this character who can do these things? And he's great at it, and I feel like that is it should be an equally heralded trait, but it is not.
It is not. Everybody always wants to talk about Daniel Day-Lewis being Abraham Lincoln
exactly.
for like 18 months.
He's exactly the kind of person we all lose our shit over.
And really, it's Keanu that's out there doing the real work.
Yeah, he's doing freaking jiu-jitsu at 6 a.m. for 4 months so that these scenes will look badass.
That's definitely one of the things that I think is super underrated. We're recording this right after the Oscars, and we talked last night about how it's ridiculous that stunts aren't honored in the Oscars.
Yes,
because
there should
just
be an
so
Oscar
much,
for stunts.
There's so much work and they're so enjoyable.
Yeah. And exactly. And this is another thing that we like about Keanu is that he's like a one-man Oscars for stunts in movies. He is out there making sure that they're done right and the people who do them well get the ability to make movies that do that kind of thing.
Yeah, and he does most of his own stunts, or he did a lot of his own fighting for John Wick. And if you, like me, love all the John Wick films, then you're up on John Wick 3, and there's a scene of him, like, riding a horse and swinging a katana, and that's totally just Keanu Reeves.
Again, fantastical and ridiculous.
Okay, I will
Can't
say...
Can't wait to see it, but that's not what happens in the real world. People don't ride horses and swing katanas.
I know, we can't talk about this. Let's just agree on the terminology of it being otherworldly.
Otherworldly, for sure. I like that you're such a John Wick nerd. I didn't realize that
I
you were
I love
like,
this film.
Like, oh my God, I was on johnwickrumors.com this morning and this thing's going to happen.
I love it. I love John Wick because of all the stuff we talked about, because Keanu does such a good job of investing the character with empathy and actual human feeling versus being a Tom Cruise-like robot.
I think that is all we can possibly say on this matter.
This has gone on so long.
Listeners, I would like you to all tweet in Hemel. And she's at Hemel Javeri on Twitter. I don't even know what your Twitter handle is.
My Twitter handle is at Hem Javeri.
Hem, yes, excuse me. And please let her know that as much as you enjoyed the film John Wick, it is supposed to be a little silly.
But if Brian thinks that, you can yell at him on social media as well.
No, you have a much larger Twitter following than I do. You're well-honed in Twitter combat. You're ready to take on all comers.
All right, I think that's it for us. I think we're going to wrap up episode 9. Join us next week for episode 10, our last episode of the season.
Yes, this was the penultimate episode of the all Keanu season of Culture Time. What will we discuss next week? You'll have to join us and find out. As always, please be sure to download the episode on the podcast downloading application of your choice. Let all your friends know about it. Quite frankly, this is a beautifully recorded, clever, valuable, culturally worthwhile podcast, and there's a lot of garbage out there, people. So why don't you all work with us to help the cream rise to the top?
Yeah, help us help you.
Help us help you
put better podcasts out in the world. Thank you guys for listening. We will see you next week.